Case number 08-5457, Anne Marie Monahan, appellant versus Janet Ann Napolitano, Secretary, Department of Homeland Security. Mr. Fisher for the appellant, Mr. Lawrence for the appellee.
While you all are getting ready, we're going to take a short break.
Stand, please.
Good morning, Your Honors. Morris C. Fisher for the appellant in this case. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. That's okay.
Good luck.
Thank you. Your Honors, this case, it's clear the district judge made an error with respect to the Burlington Northern case, not applying it with respect to the retaliation claim. And he says, with respect to his opinion on that claim, that essentially the claim of the retaliation because of the comments that were placed on Ms. Moganhan's appraisal. This is on page 154 and 155 of the record, which say she has no tact, she doesn't deal well with people, there's bad morale on others. Those comments were not there before that time. In fact, on 223 and 224, the record has her previous appraisal, which says that for her to be fully successful.
Which appraisal? What year is that appraisal?
The one I'm referring to now is the end of 91.
But that's July 25th, 91.
Right.
And that?
On 223.
Yeah, that's, you're saying as compared between that one and which
right.
one are you comparing?
And the one on 154 or 155.
Which is what date?
Okay.
That's July 20th, 92?
Yes, 92.
So, but in between, there's a January 16th, 92 comment, performance evaluation, right? That's the one where she scores 270.
I believe the one she scores the 270 is the 220. Oh, I'm sorry.
I could be wrong.
Okay. I think on my rebuttal I'll double check.
Were three evaluations. One she scored a 300 on. One she scored a 270 on,
the 280.
And one a 280, right? And they're in order. That it's in that order. 300, then 270, then 280, right?
Right. That's right.
And the grievance that you're concerned about retaliation occurring for occurs after the 270.
Well, I'm not concerned about the grievance. I'm concerned about when she filed with her counselor
on
January 24th, 1992.
Okay, but
she wanted an EEO counselor.
Right, but isn't that after the January 16th, 92 score of 270?
That is, but it's not after the comments on 154 and 155. Those are in July.
Of
92.
You mean there's a performance evaluation and then there's comments after that?
Yeah, there's comments on 154, 155. In fact, it says on 154, where she gets the interpersonal relationships, she gets the N, and it says see page 4 for justification. And then on the next page, it goes through all this stuff.
Slow down for one second. 154
of the joint appendix.
Now, is this part of the January 16th review, or what is this?
This essentially is.
This is the one that adds up to 280. Is that what you're talking about? 154?
Yeah.
And which?
154 and 155.
Right. And what's the date on this?
It's undated, but I think it's stipulated in the record that this was for the year ending 6/30 of 92. She claims that in her.
So what is it that was done on January 16th, 92?
I'm not sure.
Okay. We're looking at the 280. We're looking at the July 92 one, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm asking you about the January 16th, 92 one, right? And that was before she made any complaints, any protected complaint, right?
Right.
So she only went up after making the complaint. She went up 10 points.
I didn't see in the record, and the judge doesn't say that in his opinion, the district court judge, that the comments occurred beforehand.
Before what?
Before she filed with her counselor in January 24th, 92, and then she filed a formal EEO on February 28th, 1992. In fact, the judge's... The only reason the judge says that she loses on summary judgment on this case.
But you, as you correctly pointed out, we're de novo here, right?
I understand. Okay.
Just bear with me for one second. Help me out with this. So the one in which she scores 270 is from January of 92. Is that right?
Right, for the 91 period.
Right.
And then they raised her 10 points.
Yes, she complains.
Right.
That is not about the performance review, but she filed a complaint, and then she went up 10 points. So how can we say there's a material adverse action?
Because she got the comments.
But the comments didn't lead to a decrease. It led to an increase in her evaluation. And when you say the comments are how?
Are you talking about the comments after? Are you talking about the stuff that happened after the July 20, 92?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
That's what I thought. The supervisor sent the details over the network.
Well, that's separate. That's there was.
Wait, well, I'm asking. Okay, is that, right. I'm trying to understand. Okay. Is that part of your retaliation?
Yes, that is. That right.
Networks stuff was sent around the network, and the supervisor said, "I'm increasing your workload."
Yes. Yes.
So that you won't have time
that's
to file
right.
a complaint.
That's right.
Let me just be sure. That's
right.
different. I'm asking about the appraisals.
Right. I understand.
Judge Edwards is asking about two different things, right?
Right.
Okay. I just want to be sure. So these comments are not the ones that were sent around the network.
I don't believe so, no.
The that's thing that was sent around the network was her complaint.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So
right.
I'm not, I guess what I'm asking is.
What difference does it make? Is essentially
your yes, opinion. That is, leaving aside the judge's, the error that you're identifying in the judge's description of the law.
Right.
If after a complaint you go up in terms of your score, that can't be materially adverse.
Well, the Passer case versus American Chemical Society, in which this court held that a canceled public event to honor an employee, that was retaliation.
No, I understand that, and I understand the two right. points that Judge Edwards is right. about to ask you about. I'm only right. focusing on appraisals. One of your arguments is that she complained and was retaliated against in her performance appraisal.
Right.
But in fact, she went up. She didn't go down. So
right.
How could a reasonable juror conclude that she was retaliated against by getting a better score?
Because she got the comments.
But
the
comments still led to a better score.
Right, okay, so they led to a better score. But the question ultimately is, the standard is this something that is going to deter somebody from filing an EEO? And if it is, then it goes to the jury. We don't care about a tangible effect.
Our cases do say that it has to affect at least promotion possibilities, right?
So
what is the evidence that when you go up in a score and you get comments that's...
I think the Passer case pretty much says something that affected somebody's honor affects their ability to be promoted. And this is going to be looked at, and it's going to, I think in the same sense, a Passer. Someone gets these awful comments on their complaint. That's what's going to happen. Limited time I have, I could just...
Well, no, wait, you are on the remaining 2 points that I raised, that is part of your retaliation claim? She sought EEO counseling in August 1992.
Right.
The supervisor then sent everything over the network, suggesting in a threatening way, and increased her workload to keep her too busy to file complaints. You're
right.
saying that's
right.
impermissible retaliation.
That's right. All of those things. And each of those things, what the judge should have done is considered them in isolation. He didn't do it. All he said was he found that they're disjointed. He ignored the affidavit from her coworker that said that, she did do the work of two people on page 370. If I could just have a quick minute to talk about the headaches, disability claim.
Let's assume the district court judge
right.
was largely mistaken in the analysis with respect to migraines.
Right.
Okay? Let's assume that.
Okay.
Since your time is short. And then there is still the question as to what is the problem with respect to accommodation?
Okay. The problem is that my client says when she went to the interview for the job, which was... she discussed the headaches, she discussed the issues, she discussed the climate control. She then gets the job in September of 1990.
Right, and they did some things, and you say slowly.
A year and a half.
Okay, so what is the analysis? What is, how do you work that through in terms of a legal analysis?
Okay.
They did some things in order.
Yes.
Not as quickly as you would have preferred. They did some things ending with air conditioning.
Okay.
Okay.
All
now,
right.
What is the legal infirmity here? On these facts, the law would say what was wrong that happened.
Okay. That a jury could easily conclude that doing a study almost 9 months later, doing one study, which showed that their overall circulation was judged to be fair to poor throughout both floors. They then did another study in May of 92, 5 months later, where they conclude that the overall circulation, again, was fair to poor. There's restricted airflow. So from the time she starts, and she says in her testimony, 284 to 286 of the record, that pretty much when she started working there, she discovered the problem. Okay, so you're talking about roughly a year and 8 months to do two studies.
Could you focus on that for 1 second? When she first got the job, she asked for permission to step outside as she needed and to use workman's comp, right?
Right.
And they gave her both of those.
Right.
Well, when is the first time in the record where she, or by date, where she says that that's not enough and she needs something more?
Well, she says in her she doesn't give a date. She doesn't give a date. But she says she complained about it all the time.
Well, and, that's not, I mean, and, very nice, but that's not, okay. We're trying to, the question Judge Edwards is asking
is, I understand.
How reasonable is her iterative response, and not giving a date isn't good enough.
Okay, so, I understand.
And she ends up accommodating. So we know we're in a situation where even if it's arguably delayed, as you say, she is accommodated in the end analysis.
She is accommodated when she's moved in the air-conditioned office, 92.
Right.
Right. So there's a two-year where she's not accommodated.
Between when and when?
Between when she started.
Yes, but if we don't know, the question is when did she first ask for more than they gave her to begin with? It seems to me they gave her three different kinds of things. Now, and your issue is whether that's good enough. But they did give her the workman's comp and the ability to step outside. They gave her, they did a quality study, then they had large fans, then they did another study, then they did air conditioner, right?
Right.
And you wouldn't object to this if it was all quicker, right? That would be a fair accommodation if it had been quick enough, right?
Well, I don't know that because I'm likening it to a case where let's say you have some handicapped person and he's complaining about some steps that are crumbly and old and rotten, and the employer says, "Don't worry, we're doing a study on those steps. We're fixing those steps." Like what does that have to do with, like, you know, the bottom line here is, you know, the guy's in a wheelchair. He's not gonna. The issue is not rebuild. The issue, we know what's going to work, and
so
she says, "I need a cooler office."
Right. So we don't know that the large fans wouldn't be good enough, do we?
We don't know that. That we know she says they weren't good.
Well,
she and witnesses say.
Well, she didn't know that until they were put in. I mean, I take it large fans would not be an impermissible accommodation if they worked.
If they work, they wouldn't be.
All right. So you're not opposing that. Your question is, took too long after learning that they didn't work, or what?
It took too long. It wasn't reasonable. Why not? Because a reasonable employer would have said, we have a person here with heat-triggered migraines. We have to do something about the temperature. She's told us at the interview.
Took too long. What's the redress? And you were right on that. As a matter of law, it took too long. The redress is what?
The redress is, as a matter of law, I think that she's entitled to compensation for the pain and suffering she sustained for the period that they ignored her, and whatever effect this had on her career. You know, the fact that she had to take all these days off, and this is can't be good for her. So I think that at worst, that's an issue for a jury to decide, not at best. I think that was the issue in the case. With that, I'll sit down.
Right.
There are no other questions.
All right.
Thank you.
Mr. Lawrence.
May it please the court, I think the court has obviously touched on the heart of this case, retaliation and accommodation. And on the retaliation claims, Judge Garland, I think you put your finger on it. She makes her first EEO complaint in January of 92, And then 5 or 6 months later, she gets her next evaluation, and it goes up 10 points. That's hardly any evidence of retaliation.
Yeah, but I think you have to start from there. The potential retaliation claim here of note is after she files the August 7, 92, goes for EEO counseling. Supervisor sent the details over the network to berate and belittle her, and then increased her workload, making it very clear, I'm going to stop you from filing so many complaints. Well, now, I don't know how you can possibly read Burlington and say that's not retaliation. Let me just say one other thing so you can answer them all together. Your brief says that it would be somehow anomalous to be in a situation in which you might lose on a substantive claim and win on retaliation. I'm not going to read the quote here, but that's dead wrong. Burlington addresses that specifically. And I have the quote, if you want me to read it to him. Burlington says that's not an anomaly at all.
I think the Judge Edwards, we may have misspoken in our brief. I think this court's Rochon decision and the Burlington Northern decision set the parameters. And I think, as I think you mentioned it earlier, it's got to be in both cases. It's the activity has to be materially adverse in such a fashion that
it
would
deter. That is in a situation that has played out in evaluation situations. But that is not to suggest in a situation that you've got to remember what Burlington says. The test is, as you know, it's about whether or not that there is a threat that would likely cause an individual not to file again. That's what we're talking about.
Well, that's correct. So
take it out of the appraisal situation. And so we have to look at those two things. And then on their face, they certainly look like if you say to someone, I'm piling the work on you so you will not have time to file complaints, that would cause a normal person to say, I better stop doing it. Or when you say, I'm going to post you all over the network to embarrass and humiliate you, that would give a person pause, as Burlington contemplates.
I don't, in a couple of respects, Your Honor, at first, it does not appear from the record, and maybe I've missed something in the record, but that it was Mr. Mercado who posted it. But let's put that aside for the moment. The question is whether, in context, the conduct of Mr. Mercado, who's the principal alleged discriminating official, took actions that were sufficiently severe to deter someone from
might have
filing,
created a reasonable worker from making or supporting a charge of discrimination.
That's correct.
Why if your employer says to you, you complained, I'm going to pile on the work so high that you can't complain again, why wouldn't that dissuade a reasonable worker from filing any more complaints?
Seems like that's the easiest case I can imagine.
Well,
unless the employer additionally beat up the employee.
Obviously, there's no beating up here, but the workload and the comparative workload of the others is not represented in the record, and more importantly,
that's a credibility question, though. What the issue is not even whether she got the more workload. The issue is if your employer says to you, if you complain to the EEOC, I'm going to give you so much work that you can never complain again. Why isn't that materially adverse?
It obviously is. As
at least court, for a jury to decide. No. Maybe it's not believable. Maybe it was never said.
Well, and obviously, if it comes down to a credibility question, then it may be a jury issue.
Right.
But in the context of where we are, the question is it materially adverse in the context of the request here?
Yeah.
And as you take a look at both her performance and the overall record and the evaluations that she received comparatively with the others.
No, we're off the evaluation.
Okay,
we're only on, let's do one at a time. So
okay.
On this particular point, if you complain, you complained, I'm going to punish you by raising, in these words, I'm going to punish you by increasing your work so much that you can't complain again. Why do you say that a reasonable jury couldn't find that to be materially adverse?
I think, Your Honor, and obviously that's the test, whether a reasonable juror could conclude that. And I think...
No. The test is whether the jury could conclude that she might have been dissuaded a reasonable worker from making or supporting a charge of discrimination.
No, I'm not trying to...
I understand.
Your formulation there. But the ultimate question is the presentation to the reasonable juror. And I think it's fair on this record, based on the district court's determination and looking de novo from this court's perspective, to conclude that under the circumstances, in the context, that the connecting those dots is not clear. And I think context,
actually,
you can't...
Let me give you the other way. The other way, I think, is so clear. These are two people who did not do well together. I'm not going to attribute the blame. And the supervisor went to a point where the supervisor says, one more, this is it. I'm going to pile the work on you. I'm sick of this. Right after an EEO session was had. I've had enough of this. Anymore, I'm piling it on. You'll never be able to file another complaint. I don't know how, in that context, you could possibly suggest that Burlington would say, other than it goes to a jury. We can't decide that on summary judgment.
I believe on this
and
record.
Especially with coupling with, just in case you're not intimidated, I'm going to post all this on the internet so I can humiliate you. That's for the jury to decide.
Well, Your Honor, again, obviously context matters. And in we believe in the context with.
Well, what's the good in your context here that she. You keep wanting to go back to the appraisals, and we're trying to say, take them out. They went from 300 to 270 to 280. That doesn't save you from what thereafter happened and the prior problems that they were obviously having, including him screaming at her, including their disagreements that continued forever, and then him knowing that she was filing a complaint, and he says, I'm piling the work up.
Well, they had a series of disagreements, and that's clear, but... The disagreements are predominantly identified as part of a hostile work environment and not as a part of retaliation. Stripping it down to retaliation, as the court has done at this point, we believe that the record does not make it a jury issue. But because in the context and based on the timing and looking at the situation, we believe that. No reasonable juror could...
Why, Mr. Lawrence? You've been doing this too long. Well, why? You're giving me conclusions. I don't get it. Why? You're just stating the conclusion. In context, looking at whatever I have in front of me on this paper, it suggests it's absolutely for the jury. Given the Burlington test, if you say something like that to an employee right off of an EEOC filing, I'm going to give you so much work you'll never file another complaint, wouldn't a reasonable person be threatened?
A reasonable person would be concerned, and the question again is proximate timing, and
which the jury has to sort out.
Well, it depends on ultimately on how it is.
Can I pause over that? Is proximate timing really relevant when the allegation is that the employer specifically tied it to the EEO complaints? One thing. Proximate timing is normally in order to infer a tie to the EEO complaint. Here, her allegation is that he specifically mentioned the complaint, said this is punishment.
Well, the answer is that there was a non-actionable complaint in this context, and then the EEO complaints. And the context overall was, as you take a look at it in the performance evaluation context, complaint evaluation goes up, complaint, and then the events that we're discussing right now come about. And it's difficult to say in this context what the impact and I.
It's so difficult to say. Those are the words that we
use. You said exactly right. That's
when you use those words, that we say go to the jury.
I understand, Your Honor, and that's the focal point of of whether it becomes a jury question. And my point, and I have nothing, Judge Edwards, that there's nothing more to add to the record at this point than you have to look at the context to see whether it ends up as a jury question on the...
I'm curious before your time runs out. I'm not going
to have to be curious after his time runs out because it's already run out.
What you have to say in response, I mean, one judge's view of some of what the district court had to say on disability and migraines makes no sense whatsoever. If I would like to share chronic migraine symptoms with the district court judge and those of you who are confused about it, because the analysis makes no sense whatsoever. But let's assume that you might be able to avoid all of those many problems in the district court's decision on the accommodation argument. And your argument is what?
The argument is twofold. She made her requests for accommodation were made only orally, and they were limited to make it cooler. And I think that's at Joint Appendix 284 through 286. So she makes the only request she makes is make it cooler. In response to her requests, they do a study. They end up doing two studies. They bring in fans, and ultimately they bring in, put her in a separate office with an air conditioning. And in the context of reason...
Can there be a case where it's too long and fails accommodation and pain and suffering is...
Once again, context would be important, and I think that in an extreme case, depending on the nature of the request and the nature of the support and how the response is done, a reasonable accommodation, you might be able to fault the reasonable accommodation. I think on the record in this case, in view of the sparse request, make it cooler, the studies and taking a good look, I think they looked, the early look was in the winter, they looked then again in the spring, they brought in the fans after the second look, they brought in the air conditioning they moved her to a separate office and brought in the air conditioning at that point. I think in the context you...
First request was what time of year?
I believe it was in the winter. I'm not absolutely sure of that, Judge Edwards, but my recollection is it was winter, maybe December, January time frame. The next one was maybe April, May, and then they brought in the fans, and then they brought in the air conditioning. But I think in that context, the response of the agency was reasonable, and the response amounts to a reasonable accommodation under the circumstances of the request that was made here.
Incidentally, for your information, apparently the supervisor was the one who sent the details through the network. That's in her affidavit.
Yes, Your Honor.
Can I ask you on the law question? I'm still uncertain what the government's position about this is. The district court seemed to think that the standard was the same for retaliation and for discrimination. I take it do you agree with that or you don't agree with it?
I believe that with this court's decision in Roshan, certainly here, and then on its heels, Burlington Northern, the standard for retaliation is different from that of discrimination. It still has to be a materially adverse action. But it doesn't have
that
to be a person.
Meaning with respect to the test that Burlington gives us. That is what a reasonable person might assume given what happened.
Exactly. Okay. No, I'm not trying to back away from that, Judge Edwards. Okay. All I'm saying is that the materially adverse aspect of it remains in the equation. For a personnel action, it has to be a materially adverse personnel action for discrimination purposes,
but
for retaliation,
what I'm asking
take a step
is
back.
For the personnel action, is your position that it's the same for retaliation as it is for discrimination?
I'm sorry, I didn't get the first.
Limiting ourselves for the moment to a personnel action, not talking about the one in this case, is your position that for personnel action it's the same? Personnel action meaning, I take it, one related to employment.
Yes.
Is it the same for discrimination and retaliation? I mean, I think I read that in
the materially adverse. If you're talking about a personnel action, if the claim is that this personnel action was taken in retaliation,
yes,
or this personnel action was taken for discrimination,
yes,
we would submit that that standard would be the same in terms of materially adverse to the to
right,
the personnel
so that's,
action.
I'm having
but
a little, yeah.
But the next step in that equation, if it's retaliation, yeah, if the personnel action taken would have to deter a reasonable
so you
person.
Think it's even harder to prove retaliation than discrimination. Is that what you're saying?
I think the way it's set up, it is a little bit more difficult because of it's crisper in a personnel action discrimination context, and it's not quite as crisp in the retaliation context, I think.
It's sure but, not what Burlington says. That is what your brief suggests.
And with respect, you're ignoring our opinion in Steele versus Schaefer, which you guys were on, which was
yes,
after Burlington and before these other cases that you're citing, which specifically rejects that argument. And it points out that in Burlington there was, they addressed this question of whether the standards are the same, and the court said that they weren't the same.
I'm not being clear myself that yeah, the materially adverse aspect of it is the same, but it has to be in the retaliation
it's
context.
Not the case that something can be materially adverse for purposes of retaliation and yet not rise to the level of an adverse action for
right,
discrimination.
That's the point.
Yeah.
And your brief.
Wait, I don't want Judge Edwards' view. I just want the government's view for one second.
I believe you're correct, Judge Edwards. I mean,
Garland,
Judge Garland.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to back away from that.
Well, the brief seems to take the position that if it's not bad enough for discrimination and it's a personnel action, then it's not bad enough for retaliation. And that's also the position the district court took. Both of those seem wrong based on our opinions, and I want to know whether you agree that that's wrong.
I agree that that's not a correct evaluation in that context.
Okay. So, for example, in Burlington, the court said that a supervisor's refusal to invite an employee to lunch can be sufficient, right?
Under yes.
But I take it you might argue that wouldn't be sufficient for discrimination, but still, honoring Burlington would be sufficient for retaliation, isn't that right?
I think, as you have put it, as we put it, and it's articulated in the case, yes.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
We would ask on the basis of the record before the court and its de novo review that the judgment of the district court be affirmed. Thank you.
Does Mr. Fisher have any time? All right, one. You don't need any. Okay. Great. All right.
I'm joining the point. Is it okay to go through here to put in the numbers?
Yes. No, you don't.